the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Josh Kranzberg, in for Jason McClure. We bring you a special edition of the program today. In 1979, facing an exploding population, China instituted a one-child policy. There were exceptions, but for the most part, it was just as it sounds. From 1979 until 2016, when the policy was changed, families were allowed to have one child and one child only. While it technically worked in curbing the country's population growth, the measures the country took to ensure the policy were controversial, to say the least. Forced abortions, sterilizations, adoptions, children being abandoned. That policy, the questions it's raised, and the consequences of it are the focus of a new documentary, One Child Nation, directed by Nanfu Wang and Lin Zhang. Amazon recently bought the rights to the documentary after it won the top prize of U.S. documentaries at the Sundance Film Festival, and it recently was shown at the True False Film Festival in Columbia, Missouri. And we're lucky enough to have Nanfu Wang on today's show. Nanfu, welcome to Global Journalist. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess the first question is, take me through how this documentary came to be.
You know, in 2016, that was when the one-child policy officially ended. Everybody in China could now have two children. And at the time, the news was reporting it, and a lot of, especially the Chinese media, was celebratory, talking about how the one-child policy has contributed to Chinese economic progress. And it was talking internationally as well, and a lot of people kind of thought it was over, the error, the unprecedented population control error was over. And at the time, I thought about the one-child policy, but mostly it's because I basically grew up under the policy. The policy started 6 years before I was born, so I was as old as the policy. And in 2017, I became pregnant, and I, during the process of pregnancy and then having my own first child, it made me think a whole lot more about the policy. From the perspective of a mother, I started question a lot of things, and a lot of my childhood memories came back to me. And I started talking to my mom, asking what her experience was like having me as a mom. And the stories she told me, some of them I've never heard before, because we never had that conversation. And it made me understood how traumatic it could be for a mother to have a child in China, because everyone, in order to have a child, they needed to get the government permission. And without a birth permit, they are facing jail, fines, all sorts of punishments. So when I took my son, went back to China for the first time and to my village, the hometown that I grew up, I took that opportunity and I went to meet with the village officials who enforced, who was in position when the policy started. He's in his 70s now. And I also met with the midwife who delivered me, and she's in her 80s. And both of them revealed a lot of very brutal and horrific stories. They told me how they forced women into abortion and sterilization. And one story led to another, and it answered some of my questions, but more so it raised a whole lot more questions, which propelled me to find more people and talk to more people. And that eventually became One Child Nation.
What made you decide to put your own family, like your own life experiences, and then, you know, like you said, when you became pregnant, what made you decide to put that at the center of the documentary?
I think I wouldn't call it the center. I think it's the trigger. I had hesitated of putting myself and my family into the story. I work with my friend, Jia Ling, who is the co-director, and we did the film together. For a long time, we talked, and I told her, I said, I've been documenting my own experience, filming the interviews, conversations I had with my family, and filming my own process of like becoming a mother. So there is a possibility that we can do that if we want, but let's try not do it first. So we filmed all the people, the characters, in a way that imagining that without me being in the film, without the first-person narrative, it would still work. So to make it as compelling as possible with itself, without any explanation. And then later on, as we start assembling the footage and looking at them, and we also show that to advisors, filmmaker, fellow filmmakers, and friends. And every time it came back to the same question is, when I started telling the story from a first-person perspective, from how I got into the film and how being the mother affected me, it became much more emotional for people to understand the other's story who live like across the globe from them, and which might otherwise harder to be connected to. So eventually I decided this is the way that for people to understand the characters more deeply is to see it through my experience and my perspective.
You said you talked to your mother about this, obviously, and your mom, she supported the one-child policy, no questions asked. What was that like hearing that from your mom, that she supported this policy 100%?
It was really funny because I think she knew that I was making a documentary, and we had this on-camera conversation. And she said, oh, one-child policy is great. And I argued a little bit with her, but it soon became apparent to me that she was not going to change her mind. She was so firmly believing the policy, and I understood part of it was because the propaganda message was around us everywhere for decades, and that's really hard to change someone's thoughts and beliefs. So I just felt disappointed and sad, and I knew that it would be useless to continue arguing with her at that moment. But interesting enough, when our film premiered at Sundance, the night before its premiere, my mom came to Sundance. So the night before, I showed her the film because I knew like the next day she's going to watch it with the audience. And after she watched it, I was like, Mom, what do you think? And she was like, well, I still think the one-child policy was necessary. And I was like, really? After you've seen all of this? The film had, you know, like so many other characters, so many tragedies, and so many emotional accounts from people who experienced it and people who carried out the policy. And my mom did not change her mind. So it really surprised me. But then after thinking a little bit about it, I thought maybe that's a good thing because the film we set out to make wasn't really an advocacy of like the one-child policy is evil and we need to, you know, it's more of like we wanted to present the another narrative of the history. So 50 years later, when people think about it, the one-child policy, I wanted to find out what really happened. The available information and narrative is not only coming from the Chinese government authority, but also there is another version that reflects what the people who lived through it really think about it and talk about it. And it's a complex policy, and it's a huge nation. It's not black and white and so simple. So I think my mom's response, it's interesting that it made all of us think, like, what really happened and why it happened and why some people still think that way.
I want to take a quick moment to remind people you're listening to Global Journalist. On today's program, we're talking to Nanfu Wang, one of the directors of One Child Nation. The documentary explores China's controversial one-child policy and the consequences, intended and unintended, it resulted in. The film was recently showcased at the True False Film Festival in Columbia, Missouri. Now, you mentioned the propaganda, and that was a heavy part of the documentary. You provided some videos, including one of yourself, as part of a choir singing about how great the one-child policy is. First of all, why did you do that? And then as a follow-up, what changed your mind? Was there a moment or an incident that just flipped your thinking on it?
You know, I think for someone like me who grew up in China for like almost like 26 years, when I left China, I was 26. And when that was the only world that I knew and was familiar with, sometimes I couldn't recognize propaganda. And I think we are, because all the information around us, the media, the education we received, the line between something that is informative and something that is propaganda is so blurry that sometimes it takes a really savvy person to recognize or differentiate the two. And for me, I didn't really think a lot about propaganda around the one-child policy until I was thinking about the film. And I remembered suddenly when I was a child, because my family somehow eventually got away and paid a fine and had a second child. I had a younger brother who was 5 years younger than me. Unlike most children, most classmates and friends that I knew. So I grew up, actually, both me and my younger brother had expressed, now when we talked about it, we felt a sense of inferiority. It affected our self-esteem. We felt embarrassed and shame that we had a sibling while other people are one child. We felt as if like we are the abnormal people, yeah, and our family did something wrong, made mistakes. So it's interesting now looking back and thinking, how did that shame come from, and why would we feel embarrassed for something that is so natural and the basic human rights to have a sibling? And it suddenly dawned to me that, oh, it was because all the messages in our textbooks and TV and all the information that we were told was one child was the best. And if you have two children, you are being selfish, your family, you're taking more resources than others from the earth. So that really made me rethinking what else in my life that I took it for granted and I never questioned. And I examined my past and recognized and realized and became aware of a lot of things I did or participated or part of the propaganda. I was in the choir in school singing patriotic songs. I wrote for the university, sort of like in propaganda type of like articles. And there were so many things that it was just so normal in when we grew up.
Well, that leads me to my next question. One thing that I noticed throughout the film is the people that you talk to, even if they didn't necessarily support the one-child policy personally, it was almost met with a collective shrug of their shoulders, like, what can you do? What was that like, talking to those people that did not necessarily agree with the policy but went along with it without even arguing about it?
I think when I was filming it, that was something that I didn't expect. I met with so many people whose lives were basically destroyed by the policy, and they live in pain. And it was like obvious when on their face when they remembered those memories. But eventually when I asked them, including my own family, do you hate the policy? What do you think about the policy? And everybody basically said the same thing. Policy is a policy. What could we do? We had no choice. And to me, it was one after another. I noticed the pattern, and I noticed basically everybody said the same thing. And at first it was frustration. As like, you know, as a filmmaker, I wanted to hear some revelation, somebody who had some insights. But then I didn't find that. And it forced me to look at those we had no choice statements and to figure out why, no matter which side of the policy they are at, and no matter how traumatic the experience is, they basically had the same attitude. Then it became clear to me, you know, they all felt the policies from top down, and they had no option to make a choice. And when they feel like they did not have the choice, could not make the decisions in their own lives, sometimes they couldn't really think about their own responsibility. They felt it's not my responsibility.
another one of the most striking moments that really took my breath away was you spoke to the midwife. Please correct me if I'm getting any of this wrong. You spoke to the midwife that delivered you, and she said that over the course of her career, probably performed thousands of forced abortions and sterilizations. And she knows that she has to live with that for the rest of her life, and is now trying to make up for it by being an infertility doctor. And I hope I'm not spoiling too much of the movie, but the scene that just took my breath away was every time a couple that was struggling to have a child finally had a child, they gave her a banner or a pennant. And so she showed four or five and then opened a door and turned on the light, and there were dozens, and then went into another room where there were dozens more. Take me through how you felt talking to her and then discovering that when she showed that to you.
I was shocked. I went to her house at night, and I didn't expect it like any much more than, you know, just a basic conversation. And I started by asking her, do you remember how many babies you delivered in your career? Because I thought she's 84 and this is a natural, you know, the first question. And she said, well, I don't remember the number of deliveries, but I do remember I did 50,000 to 60,000 abortions and sterilizations. And my jaw just dropped. And I couldn't believe that she just, not only that she remembered, but she just said it that.
It was so matter of fact.
Yeah. It's like, it's not even something that she hesitated or, and then she followed up by saying, I kept account of this because I'm guilty. And that's also so straightforward. So, you know, it just completely surprised me. And then she immediately also, I asked her, what are you doing now? And she said, oh, I only treat infertility. And the banners that people send her with the pictures of a baby attached on the banner was visually very striking. And she told me the reason that she did it was because she believed, you know, if she can bring one baby to the world now by treating infertility, she hoped to reverse like the past guilt that she did, basically killing baby when she aborted them. So I think to me it was that whole experience was, it changed the way that I think about the film, that I thought about the film. Because when I started, I thought it was a simple story of perpetrators and the victims, that I'm going to find people on both sides and the people who committed basically the atrocity and the people who are the victims. And meeting her and experiencing how she felt about it, and it made me realize she too was a victim of the policy, even though she appeared to be the perpetrators. So it really like completely reshaped me how to think about the movie and what is the line between perpetrators and victims when they live in a country where the policy is not something that they can, let's say, vote for and make a decision for or choose to do or not to do, when they couldn't even have their own way of thinking. All the information was controlled in a way.
I'm going to take a quick moment to remind people that you're listening to Global Journalist. I'm Josh Kranzberg, in for Jason McClure. Today we're talking to Nanfu Wong, one of the directors of the documentary One Child Nation. The award-winning film takes us to China, where people there are dealing with the consequences of its controversial one-child policy, which lasted for more than 3 decades. If you're interested in more Global Journalists, you can visit us online at globaljournalist.org. There, you can access archives of this program, as well as additional coverage of underreported foreign news and human rights issues. You can also follow us on Facebook or Twitter, subscribe to the videocasts of this program on YouTube, or get our podcast from iTunes or SoundCloud. We mentioned earlier in this conversation that China recently reversed its decision, and it's now a two-child policy. How long do you think the legacy of the one-child policy of China will last? And what do you think the long-term effects of that are going to be on that country?
The policy was in place for over 35 years, and it affected millions of families, generations of people. in some of the facts, I think, just started to show, like the gender imbalance and the aging society, the lack of workforce, and let alone the, you know, the unaccounted, there is no statistics to show or no study has been done on this several generations of children born under this one-child policy who grew up without siblings, who have no aunt and uncle or cousin. I mean, what is the long-term impact on them psychologically and on the parents who also suffered, whether it's loss of their children or abandonment or, you know, abortion, sterilization? It's really hard to say. And I think from the anthropological and the economic, some of the effects have, as I mentioned, the gender imbalance, those things have already shown. Yeah, I think the impact is really just the beginning, even though the policy seemed to be over.
Is there a road to recovery? Can things improve? Can things get better? Can the issues you just mentioned, can they be reversed?
It's really hard to say that.
I know, I'm not asking you to look in your crystal
ball. But I think what saddened me was now there is a two-child policy, and it seemed like a lot of people are celebrating it already. And
there's even propaganda. There's propaganda
saying
the two-child policy is the best.
Exactly. What was funny, you know, in the past, during the one-child policy, people couldn't have a second child. If they find out are pregnant, they would get forced to abort or pay a fine. And now the new incentive in some territories are when a couple went to register for marriage, they would have to put down the deposit, and they can only get the deposit back when they bring the birth certificate of their second child.
like a weird kind of security deposit?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So you didn't have a chance to talk to any Chinese officials, government officials. I would imagine they would give some sort of response like, we supported this policy. And
we talked to the award-winning official, that woman.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, she's one of the 10 best officials every year they selected.
And correct me if I'm wrong, she said yes, of course, this was a great policy.
Yeah, she said, our leaders are perfect. They are like such intelligent leaders. Otherwise, our country would have been ruined if it were not because of the one-child policy.
Have you heard of any blowback to your documentary since it's come out?
Oh, it just came out, and we haven't heard anything yet. But it wouldn't be surprising if down the line there will be a reaction.
What questions are still unanswered for you after finishing this?
I think it's like anything that we learn, it answered lots of my questions, but also there are new questions like, to what degree people would remember, and if the memory is lost, what would happen to the nation? You know, I think memory is such a crucial part of who we are, our identity, and a nation's identity as well, the collective memory. And if that doesn't exist, what the future is largely decided by how we remember the past. So I think that would be the question that I don't know yet. I don't have the answer. I think it depends on how people would remember this policy.
Could you see China changing that policy again, going back to a one-child policy or increasing it to three or four?
I think it's very likely soon there will be no limit to how many children a family can have, because right now they are like strongly encourage people to have two children, and the lack of the aging society is a severe problem, as a lot of statistics show, like very soon 35% of the population would be elderly. Mm-hmm. And then the economy, the government is concerned whether the economy is sustainable with the lack of workforce. So I think it wouldn't be a surprise that soon there is no limit.
The propaganda that we see throughout the film, it speaks to how difficult it probably was to report on this as a journalist. Do you see, what are the biggest issues that aren't being reported in China from journalists in that country?
I think a lot of these stories in our documentaries, in one way or another, some sort of journalists, investigative journalists, had tried, made an effort to report, because it wasn't like it's a secret. A lot of the practice were known to people, and journalists had made an effort to do so, but the sad fact is those journalists often received a repercussion, whether they were fired from their organization that they worked for, or they were forced to leave China in exile. One journalist, for example, in our film we featured, had to move to Hong Kong after he made a report about the government confiscating babies. So I think a lot of journalists had made effort to, but unfortunately, it's hard to get the information out, and especially to have an international exposure.
What do you hope viewers take away from this film when they walk out of the theater?
One thing I hope is really like it raises the awareness and correct people's impression from the mainstream media, especially the Chinese mainstream media that eventually transferred to international, where people get to know about China, and most people are like, oh, isn't it great already? Like, it ended. Human rights is not a severe problem anymore. So I really hope that people can see another side of China that they really got to see from the mainstream medium. And then the other thing is, as we talked about, propaganda is such a strong element in our film and is so pervasive. And I also hope it can provoke people into thinking about their own environment and their own country, their own government, like things that they have never questioned before.
Last question with about 30 seconds left. You're wrapping up this project. You're going around talking about it. What's next?
Oh, wow. Both Jalen and I have started a new film, but it's in production. So,
any details or you want to keep it under wraps?
I'm working in Cuba.
Cuba.
Yeah.
But that's all you want to talk about.
So I can say no.
That's okay. It was worth a shot.
Yeah.
That's all for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA, Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Our thanks again to Nanfu Wong for joining us. The documentary One Child Nation is out now. Our producer this week is Seth Bodine, and Travis McMillan is our director. For all of us here at Global Journalist, I'm Josh Kranzberg. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.